Good evening, and welcome to What a World Radio, celebrating diversity and loving it. This is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. And if I sound a little out of breath, that's because I am. We've had a fun night, folks. Tonight's Galactic Adventures will be brought to us by Jennifer Shepherd, otherwise known as Lipstick Mystic, quote, a modern chick who embraces the world of the miraculous while wearing comfortable shoes. I love the comfortable shoes. I never can get a comfortable pair. And in the second hour will be Judith Pleasant, spiritualist, minister, and healer, psychic medium, and songwriter. Judith's story is one of hope and compassion, and yet she remains unvarnished in a life filled with challenges. Pretty cool. Well, before we get into our show, folks, we're going to do a earthquake alert from Charlotte King. Charlotte, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Charlotte, let us know what's going on this week.
Well, this week there's been quite a bit of activity, nothing earth-shattering, I guess you would have to call it. On the early part of the week, we had a 6.7 in Afghanistan, and then we had a 6.3 in the Fiji Islands area. And the Afghanistan quake, that would be the left ear, and the Fiji quake, that would be the right rib cage. I'm sorry. Then we had several events in California offshore, both northern and southern California, little clusters of quakes, nothing very large there. Then El Salvador had a quake on the 16th, and that one's kind of interesting. It causes a headache, but it also has its own specific signature or sound, and it sounds like a horn honking, but you have to imagine the horn honking in the frequency of a foghorn, but that's what it sounds like. There was a quake on Saturday, a 6.2, about 300 kilometers northeast of Tokyo. No one was killed. Two people were injured in that one. Mexico's had several events this week. They've been anywhere from a 2.5 to a 4.7, and that's a lot of heart pain for people that are sensitive. Migraine headaches also go with that. The Sierras are still quite active in California. St. Helens has been doing its thing, and Mount Hood actually had a quake here in Oregon this week. Hawaii's been having a lot of activity yet, probably from the change in the lava shelf that broke off and the ensuing lava flow on that. And then Alaska is showing up awful lot on the USGS right now. Many, many quakes. Perhaps it's the fact that they factored in Alaska when it wasn't there before as a regular on our list of quakes, but I could not believe how many quakes show up in Alaska on a regular basis now. There's been some solar activity, nothing really heavy. The full moon didn't seem to do anything major this time. And Chile did have an event, which we had talked about last weekend. And that's pretty much it. If you have kitties and they're getting sick, then there's a good chance there's going to be earthquakes in Oregon, Big Bear, Southern California, down around Simi Valley. Birds are sitting on wires which follow fault systems, and they're acting kind of strange again, and that's quite normal for any of the activity that's been happening. I guess that's about it, Nevin. I really don't have much more.
Well, Charlotte, I checked your earthquake alert page yesterday, and it was still the 26th of November.
Actually, the date said the 26th. If you put red farther down, in fact, I updated it tonight.
Ah, wonderful.
And the reason it was, I couldn't get the blog page to change the date on it, but the information was different.
Oh, okay. Well,
but tonight I got it to change, so it gives the right date on it, and it has been updated.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Charlotte, and we will hear from you again next week.
Are we going to do that Are we going to do that Christmas night?
Oh, no. Excuse me. You're right. We are not having a Christmas show, folks. There on Christmas Day, Christmas night, there will not be a broadcast. or they may be, there may be, it may be a rerun or something like that, but.
What about New Year's? It's also Sunday after.
New Year's we will.
Okay.
On New Year's Day.
All right.
Okay, I'll hear from you then.
All right. Take care,
Charlotte.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, you heard the report on earthquakes, and now for a little bit of an update on What a World Radio. We jumped the gun a little bit there in terms of show dates. Again, my notes say there will not be a show on December 25th. We will be back on the air on January 1 with a great show with Michael St. Clair, the astrologer's astrologer. And what happened on this date of December 18th in history? Well, slavery is abolished in the United States on December 18th, 1865. And that is actually occurring with the passing of the 13th Amendment in 1865. In 1912, on December 18th, we have the discovery of the Piltdown Man. I'm very familiar with the whole occurrence of that because I took a minor in anthropology and archaeology. The Piltdown Man, it was a fraud, and it was possibly done by Charles Dawson and others. I don't think anybody is really clear as to who developed this whole fraud. Essentially, it was a skull, so on and so forth, believed to be an ancient hominid, and this fraud continued from 1912 until its exposure in 1953. That's a long time to carry a practical joke, and a lot of scientists in the field of archaeology actually did believe it. 1969, capital punishment ended in the United Kingdom. Well, we looked a little bit about history. How about births? Gee, do we know anybody that was born on December 18th. Let me see. I'm checking my records. I'm furiously going through them. Oh, you'll never believe this, folks. Guess what? Don and Doug Newsom, happy birthday. Creators of Blogging Service. That's right, folks. The Newsom Twosome, born 1968. Congratulations, guys. In 1878, Joseph Stalin was born, you know, leader of the Soviet Union, and one other, folks. 1916, Betty Grable. Now, probably most of our listeners are too old to even know who I'm talking about. Made a fantastic movie called The Gay Divorcee with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. She was actually known as the pinup poster gal all the World War II soldiers, and always referred to as the lady with the million-dollar legs. In fact, she actually had insurance. She didn't carry it, but the studios carried insurance on her legs for $1 million. Topping the news tonight? Well, everybody knows Bush admits to complicity about NSA spying on Americans. And Patriot Act did not get extended. That's enough of the news. I'm not going to bore you any longer. Who wants to hear about Washington, D.C.? I want to hear about our first guest, Jennifer Shepherd, the lipstick mystic, whose focus is on empowering people with metaphysical information that's fun and practical. Now, she has a long list of credentials in the metaphysical realm, but I'm going to have her tell her own story. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Hi, Nevin. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm pleased to take part in things tonight.
Oh, it's just great having you here, Jennifer. I see your post many times on Rumor Mill News, and my wife is also an astrologer.
That's great.
We've both been very interested in your work. So before we get into details, why don't you tell us a little bit about something about your background? Who are you? Where do you come from? How did you get raised? And how did you get started in being mystical?
Those are all really good questions. And I'm glad I'm going to have a chance to explain just a little bit, because In the last few years, I've moved much more towards connecting with people online using my, what I call my superhero name, the Lipstick Mystic.
And well, let's start with that. How did you choose that name, Lipstick Mystic?
It actually kind of arrived in a moment of divine inspiration some years ago when I was sort of a little bit depressed about the fact that when you venture out into the world as either a writer or as a speaker or as a teacher, and you attempt to talk about psychic energy and metaphysics, you're so easily put into a box. And it's, you're either a psychic or you're just an astrologer or you're a healer. And I kind of wanted to move beyond all those terms and find a new way to express myself that was kind of young and friendly and fun. And also incorporating humor, because I think humor is so important.
Yeah, it is. It is. And in all your writings, Jennifer, it demonstrates that humor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I always feel that a spiritual path, while sometimes it's so challenging, and certainly, you know, as you cover on your show, we are going through times that are just amazing. You know, they're once in an eon, if even that, opportunity for us to grow and to experience very exciting energies. And there are a lot of challenges with that. But ultimately, it's all about love, and it's all about growth, and it's all about really coming into our miraculous nature as spiritual human beings. And I feel very passionately that that's the work that we're all engaged in. And sometimes it feels more like work than play, but I try to honor the lighter side.
How did you start out? I mean, were you like 6 years old and discovered you were psychic? Or
no, I actually come to things from an arts background, and I actually find that a lot of people become more psychically aware through being involved in music and art and acting. I was an actress as a young child growing up, and a musician and a singer, and I was always taking acting classes, which are very fun because they really teach you the art of meditation and visualization and breath control and relaxation. And through these exercises I was taking as I would prepare to do different shows, something was just triggered. And by the age of 12 or 13, I started to manifest a lot of psychic gifts. And I just kind of quietly kept them to myself. I didn't come from a family that believed in any of this stuff or had any framework to help me understand it. And I quietly read books and experimented on my own. And by the time I was a teenager, I was already giving readings to people and really started very young working at holistic festivals and took off with my own practice by the time I was 20 and worked full-time as a counselor, which was very, very rewarding. I got a little burned out towards the end of it, and I made the transition into writing and teaching, which is what I do now. So I've really seen a lot of sides of the holistic health world.
How do people get in touch with you? What is your website? Mm-hmm. Do you have a newsletter? And please tell us all about that. How can we get there?
Sure. Well, it's easy to remember. My website's name is lipstickmystic.com. And you can also do an internet search for me, Jennifer Shepherd, or for the name Lipstick Mystic, and you'll find me all over the place. Probably find some rumor mill news posts still hanging around. And I also have a monthly free newsletter where I try to put in some fun little tidbits about, you know, how to integrate spirituality into your life in a practical way. So you can sign up for that. And I also have updates about different media things. You know, I have a syndicated column that reaches 2 million people. And, you know, I get picked up by different magazines and different projects all the time. So I love to connect with readers that way. And I invite people to write to me with their story and their thoughts and their concerns, because I find that sometimes people on a spiritual path are very isolated, and they feel like they have to be perfect, and they can't talk about the dark stuff or the challenges they're facing. I really try to be a mentor and a guide that says, you know, we're all going through this, and the more we communicate with each other honestly, the better. So they're welcome to write to me.
By stating that on the air, you're going to get a lot of email, kid.
That's okay. I mean, it all becomes wonderful fuel for, you know, dialogue with other healers and writers. And we really have a responsibility to sort of take the man on the street and say, what is he going through? And is our work helping him? I feel that very strongly with websites, with authors, with anybody who's doing healing work, that we have an obligation to address the real stuff that people are going through instead of sort of pretending, if you're just thinking positively, you'll be fine. Well, you know, some days that doesn't work.
Right.
So I very much welcome input from people.
Besides the personal crises of people, I know you have a concern about the crisis facing the holistic health and metaphysical community.
Yes, I do. And in fact, I wanted to ask you, Nevin, as well, because you interview so many wonderful guests on your show, and Blog and Service is doing such a great job reaching people. And I don't know, I feel like you guys are doing a great job finding a balance between the stuff that is, well, we know there's a lot of scary news out there, there's a lot of darker stuff that's going on, and finding a balance between that and the more positive stuff that's really inspiring and really, you know, uplifts you. But I find that the community itself, and correct me if you found this to be true, maybe you haven't in your own work as a radio announcer and interviewer, I see the holistic community and the alternative community splitting into two very antagonistic camps, and it really concerns me. And I'm seeing this on websites and throughout the internet and through the holistic health community as I network with other healers that I know. And it seems like we're dividing into, and these are just names that I've come up with. I don't mean to offend anybody because I feel like I belong to both of these. Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, just heard a click on it. Wanted to make sure you're okay there. I belong to sort of both of these camps myself because I don't really feel that I'm one or the other. But people are sort of on the one group I call the white lighters, and they're the ones who are the wonderful, love-centered kind of neo-hippies who really embrace love and positive thinking. And, you know, they kind of just want to wave a magic fairy wand and tell you that if you just think positively, everything will be fine. And these people are very inspiring. I've known so many healers over the years that are like this. I used to be this way myself. I didn't ever think that there was anything evil in the world, and I didn't really see the shadow side either in myself or in others. But that kind of sets you up for some very, very hard knocks later on when you have to deal with the shadow side, both within your clients and also sometimes through psychic attack and other things that you become a target for. So the white lighters have one piece of the puzzle, and that's love, and that's probably the most important piece. But they're not really understanding how to deal with the problems that people go through sometimes. And I call them one camp, the white lighters. The other camp I call the conspiracy theorists. I'm also a conspiracy theorist, so I put myself there as well. And that's when people are researching so hard to track down everything from the corruption of the Bush regime to the Illuminati to problems with the FDA and our pharmaceutical industries and, you know, the score, all that stuff that's very important to learn about. But a lot of the researchers who are involved with that get so pulled into depression or paranoia, they kind of end up, you know, sitting in the house with the shotgun, you know.
You can be baited for sure.
Oh, I know. And I think what's hard is people like that have a great passion for uncovering the truth, and bless them for it. I have many friends on that side of the fringe that I adore, and they've backed me up many times when I've had problems. But they find it hard to come back to love and to come back to lightness of being. And I feel that these two camps are getting more dramatic and more polarized right now. I don't know if you see that as you network with people. Do you see that at all in your work? Or
yes, I do. You're probably, Jennifer, the very first guest that has ever actually asked me a direct question.
Well, I want to hear your story too, Nevin.
my wife is sitting here while I'm on the radio, and she's smiling at me because she's aware that this really is a first. Well, let me put it to you this way. Besides doing this show, I also do a daily news broadcast. And I do that from covering the blogs. Whatever is in the blogs, you know, that's what I announce on the news. However, I always have a choice. You know, am I going to go for the light side or the dark side? Which is it going to be?
And it's tricky because you want to be truthful. It's tough.
You have to present a balance. And sometimes I do it within a show. Sometimes I do it across shows. I will say this. You're very right about this, how am I going to say it? It's becoming much more pronounced than I've ever seen.
Pronounced is a very good word, Nevin, because I'm not just seeing it in that community. I mean, we see it in everything from the Republicans versus the Democrats to the Christians versus the Muslims. I mean, it's in so many walks of life. I'm even noticing it in relationships. People are reporting more and more tension in marriages and in relationships where they tend to get much more identifying the other person as evil and they're just going to give up on them. And I find it very sad because we all need to heal the shadow together. And every single one of us is in this together.
Well,
so,
I think I think the way that blogging service, specifically Don Newsom, the producer of all of it, the way he has approached it is he constantly monitors everything that is occurring with whatever's going on the radios or whatever is being written. And if it seems more one-sided than another, then he tries to add the other side to it.
That's
great.
Of course,
it's always up to the reader.
Yeah.
I'll give you a perfect example of what you're talking about. I made two posts. I very rarely do a post on the TNT message board. But this one particular day, I wanted to know the answer to the question you asked. One post, the title of it was Beware.
Ah.
And all it had on it was a link to a particular website that I felt uncomfortable about.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was preaching the very thing that we're talking about, raising consciousness and so on and so forth. The next post was right above it, and I titled it Rejoice.
I like that.
And I put a link under it. Now, over a three-day period, Jennifer, the title Beware had 199 hits. The title Rejoice had, I think, 37.
That's very profound, and I find that to be true as well with my writing, or being a writer myself. I'm often trained in things like copywriting technique, which I sort of detest because they really say appeal to the lowest common denominator, appeal to fear and anger and greed, and then you'll get people's attention.
Well, I wanted to know what would happen, and it was disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, 4-1, that is really disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what
I agree
does that
with you.
Tell you, Jennifer, as a person out there working in the field, working with people involved in metaphysics? That little experiment that I conducted, which, I mean, obviously it's a pretty poor little study, what does it tell you about what people are looking for?
It's an excellent example of how we are always sort of, on the one hand, aiming for love and healing and improvement and better quality of life. And at the same time, we have this almost addictive fascination to the horror and the
drama,
darkness.
Drama, drama, drama.
Yeah, and it's not that stuff isn't interesting or valuable in its own way, but I agree with you. It's challenging in an online medium especially to appeal to people's better nature and yet not bore them because it goes back to what I was saying about what I call the white lighters. And again, so much progress was made starting in the 60s with consciousness raising and people really starting to wake up to alternative religions and spiritual practices and health practices. And that was all so good. But we lost momentum somewhere in the late 90s. And now it's very unhip to say that you're a new ager. That's seen as like some kind of terrible governmental thing that's a plant from the CIA. Or, you know, I don't care who started the movement. The fact is the new age is here. It's the age of Aquarius. It's just dawning. It marks a tremendous turning point for the human spirit to be able to experience energy differently on this planet in a much more creative way.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate.
Please
here,
do.
Now, you brought it up. I feel like a little bit of deja vu. I had made another post about a week ago, another one of my rare posts. And I titled it, The Business of Spirituality.
That's a great title. I have to go read your post now.
Well, I was getting annoyed, Jennifer, with... Here's what I kept seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I would go into the blogs. I would go into the right-wing Christian blogs, the
mm-hmm.
left-wing atheist blogs, the Satanist blogs, the New Age blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I went to the traditional religious blog, they would present material, they would present arguments, and that's all. But every time I hit anything to do with the New Age, it was hard to find what they were talking about because they were so involved in selling their books, selling a candle, selling a crystal, selling this, selling that.
That's
I finally got disgusted with it and wrote, it was a very short piece. And after I wrote that, I was immediately challenged by a very good friend of mine
hmm.
who took it personally.
Oh, that's a shame.
Now, I'm not against people selling. I mean, you have to do that to stay alive, to stay in business.
But it doesn't sound like it was very balanced. It sounds like you said, you needed to kind of blast them and say, come on, why are we really here? We're here for dialogue and spiritual service. And, you know, it's different to maybe put a little thing in your byline, but when your whole post is not advancing discussion. Absolutely. I agree with you. Spiritual commercialism can be really terrible. I mean, it's in many parts of the New Age, unfortunately. I read an article this weekend in the Trenton Times, I believe it was, because I live in New Jersey, and it talked about a phenomena called metro spiritual people. Like, you know, there's metrosexuals now, and that's sort of like, you know, like
metro spiritual, great.
Metro spiritual, and it said, but it was a term to describe what you're talking about in some ways, the consumer that kind of is a New Age window shopper. They go and they take yoga for a little while. They spend lots of money at the spa. They buy lots of crystals. But they're not necessarily really on a spiritual path. They're just sort of going along with spending a lot of money on stuff. And they are kind of the metro spiritual person. And what's tricky is you do have to make a living when you're in the holistic arts. You have to appeal to people who have cash flow. But at the same time, you can attract very shallow seekers that are actually a real pain in the butt to work with.
Well, yeah. You know, Jennifer, when Katrina happened, there was an onslaught of people who left their homes, packed a small bag, and went to New Orleans to help.
Yeah.
And those people, the majority of them, were defined as small organizations, usually out of a ministry of some sort. I did not see one sign that said, we are from Sedona and we're here to help you.
That's interesting, too. You're right. I didn't really see any groups that were organized in that way, at least not publicly talking about their work. So that is very interesting. And it's sad because it says a lot about us as a community that, you know, our intentions are very good in the holistic field and in the alternative field. But we can tend to be paralyzed by our various agendas, either, you know, like you said, promoting goods and services or books. Okay, so great, you have a book out, but your spiritual work shouldn't stop, you know?
No, it shouldn't at all.
No, it should continue on, and it's just another way for people to connect with you, you know. So I think there's a lot, like you said, that sometimes the New Age kind of people who ascribe to sort of that as their place where they, you know, hang out on the blogs or whatever, have sort of themselves to blame in some ways for the bad taste that the words New Age sometimes leave in people's mouths. And it's unfortunate.
Yes.
It's unfortunate.
We're our own worst enemy. There's no question about it.
But I think this issue that I was raising earlier about the difference between the very, very loving, fluffy bunny New Age people who really are beautiful and inspiring. I mean, these are the life coaches, the motivational counselors, the Reiki healers, many of them who are lovely, lovely people that have such good spirits. But you go to them with some of these darker issues and they just stare at you blankly. They haven't been trained in techniques that I call spiritual warriorship and the ability to discern different kinds of energy vibrations and remove them from a client and help you fend that stuff off and clear that stuff out. And so the conspiracy theorists are a little better at least saying, there's some other stuff out there, guys, we got to keep in mind. But they don't necessarily offer solutions.
No. And the solutions from that other side are minimal.
Yeah.
I think that part of what I see is that while we're offering to, you know, to be helpful, the price attached to it, in very simple terms, Jennifer, is beyond the means of most people who are living at the poverty level or lower. I mean, if you were to take a poll of the average income of, quote, New Agers, I suspect you're not going to find too many people living on the street. We're not doing that kind of work. It's the Christian communities that are doing it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. There's a lot of discrepancies there when it comes down to sort of walking the walk and not making it something that only a yuppie can afford. Spirituality should be available to everyone.
Okay, I make a suggestion to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you lead the band on this, and I will get Don Newsom to lend support. To try to put together a coalition of New Age,
mm-hmm.
define it for what it is, New Age, pagan types, whatever word you want to use, that we are bound and determined to help people regardless of their income level.
I think that's important because I'm sort of a contrarian these days in that I don't have a full-time healing practice, so I'm not so invested in not criticizing the movement. I can be more of a reporter who stands on the outside and says, I've been there and I see some of the problems, and I would very much like to network with other people who can get the word out about how can we reframe the experience of being a spiritual seeker these days while remaining, you know, smart and relevant and active without it being a quest for just money or a quest for, on the other hand, you do need to be supported. So there are, you know, I think everyone has to come to it differently. If they are only involved part-time, that's fine. You know, that's what a day job's for.
Yeah. While we're talking about putting out energy, you do have a concern about maintaining clear and a clear and vibrant energy field.
Seems
to be becoming more challenging.
It does. I mean, part of it is just the obvious things like pollution in our environment. More importantly, I think the electromagnetic pollution that has really flapjacked our energy systems. Because if you think about it, it's just in the last 100 years that we have all these things that aren't really natural to our bodies, from microwaves to television to, you know, all these vibrations with cell phones and the things that our bodies, we don't know in a couple of years if this stuff isn't going to turn out to be incredibly lethal. I will not have a cell phone anywhere near me to this day.
Oh, you don't use a cell phone?
No, I my body gets a very bad reaction to it. I can really feel that it's not a good vibration, and I'm very not very well around cell towers either. And this was long before I did any reading about them being a problem. I hadn't really thought about them before. So there's a lot of electromagnetic pollution that I'm even more concerned about than chemical pollution. And
well, there's a there's research to back up what you're saying. There's in fact, one study of state patrol demonstrates a very high rate of prostate cancer. And that's because of where they're holding the radar detector. You know, they hold it below the steering wheel.
Yeah, that's right, because it's low in a police car. That's interesting. That's very interesting. And I think, unfortunately, we're all living on the computer. I have an energy-sensitive psychic friend of mine who says that she has to be very careful about how long she sits at her computer. And she just does it for a couple hours and makes sure she gets away from it because she can feel. She also does kinesiology, which allows you to muscle test reactions in the body to anything from food to something in your environment. And she always muscle tests negatively if she stays at the computer over a certain amount of time. She's learned to obey that signal from her body so that she walks away. Now, me, I'm still wired to the computer all day. That's what I need to work on. But there are a lot of things that you can do to retain more balance in your energy field. And if you want to, I can share just a couple of quick things for your listeners.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Because we're heading into the winter season and immune system issues become more pronounced as we all are inside with each other, coughing and sneezing and living in close proximity. But one of the basic things that goes back to really all of the ancient esoteric traditions is the use of sea salt. And taking a tub, you know, getting in the bathtub and running a really hot bath with a fair amount of sea salt in it really is wonderful. And
where do you get sea salt from, Jennifer?
You can buy it in most grocery stores now inexpensively. And you can also buy more specialized sea salts that are like Dead Sea salts that come from the Dead Sea in places like health food stores and holistic health places. They're a little more expensive. They often have essential oils in them, too, which is really great because it smells so good. And you can kind of get aromatherapy along with the benefits of the salt. Salt's interesting because sea salt, especially, better than table salt. It not only helps the muscles relax, it's a wonderful medicine if you have aches and pains. I mean, that's been medically proven. It's wonderful for muscle aches. But on an energy level, for whatever reasons, and probably because our bodies are so much composed of saline, I mean, we have salt within us, we respond very well to salt on the skin and in our energy field. And it actually clears out all the electromagnetic goop that you've absorbed over the course of the day. And it's much better for you than even just taking a shower, which also washes your energy field somewhat clean. A salt bath is wonderful. You just need to be in there about 20 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a real dumb question now.
That's okay. I like dumb questions.
And this is really dumb. Why is sea salt better than, I don't know, just the plain old salt? What's the difference?
It's slightly better. You can certainly use table salt if you have no access to sea salt. But sea salt still has all the original mineral components and sort of the other ingredients that our bodies like to take in with salt. It's not just pure salt. It'll also be things like magnesium and calcite and other things that are very friendly to our bodies. And that unique combination.
It becomes a mineral bath in a sense, I guess.
Right, with salt being the primary component. And there's something about that salt that our body just naturally responds to. And I find it, in some ways, it's the only tool I've found that removes the electromagnetic pollution. So it becomes very important if you work all day at a computer to try to take a salt bath once a week if you can.
How do you know if you're electromagnetically polluted?
Well, if you're an energy sensitive like me, it's a lot easier because you can really recognize it both in yourself and in others. But for the average person, just look at it logically. Are you spending a lot of time using a cell phone? Are you on a computer a lot of the time? Do you sit in front of the TV for hours at a day? If some of these things are part of your day-to-day lifestyle, just assume that you have some electromagnetic pollution going on. Don't get panicked about it. Just realize that it's something that you have to cleanse out periodically in order to stay healthy. And then sometimes you'll notice, actually, if it gets really intense, like if you've been working 10 hours at a computer for a week at a time, you know, something that's intensive, you'll notice differences in things like your mood, your energy levels, your physical immunity. You become more prone to picking up cold bugs and viruses. And an energy sensitive like me can actually see holes and cracks in your auric field that are almost like earthquakes that are happening in the auric field that surrounds the body. And it's these little cracks that can cause openings of negative stuff coming in, both physically and etherically. So it's best to kind of just realize that we're living in weird times where with all this electromagnetic stuff going on, we need to really take care of ourselves in different ways.
Well, maybe at some point there'll be mineral baths on every corner, because the people that you described about 95% of the population.
I know, and it's sad because it's such a huge change to our energy systems. You would not believe it. Our grandparents and great grandparents who lived 100 years ago, you know, if they were alive today and standing in front of you, and I was scanning their energy field, even if they weren't a very happy or very enlightened person, their energy field would be so much more balanced than ours is today, just because of what we're walking through each day. So
yeah, you can't drive a car. I mean, even the modern cars are fully equipped with this electromagnetic activity.
The GPS systems, and it's like all this stuff coming into us all the time. So it's tricky. I think that the main thing to do is to realize that, especially if you live in a city, that the salt tub thing is very important. If you don't have a tub, you can always go to the ocean in the summer as much as possible and get out in the water for a little while, because that will also clear you out. And if you really don't have access to either thing, you can always take a bottle and fill it with sea salt and water and actually spray that through your energy field. And that helps as well.
I know my wife is a great believer in sea salt, Ungabon, and pie crust. The pie crust came in from a time when we had some swelling. She found that she could mold a pie crust around her ankle, freeze it, and it made a great healing device for her.
That's interesting.
Let's get on to some of the other self-healing from a shamanic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned soul loss, and the other one is de-recording. I have absolutely no idea what that means.
I might not have typed it properly. It's decording.
Okay,
idea...
excuse me, that's the way I read it. You typed it properly. It was my vision.
I thought I was a better typist than that. After all, I do it for a living.
What is that?
Well, the two ideas that you mentioned, soul loss and decording, they're shamanic terms for describing some of the things that are actually going on as we interact with other people on a day-to-day basis. And decording is a technique. If you're a clairvoyant, you can actually see cords of energy that are kind of like umbilical cords that connect people to other people. And if you have a long-term relationship with someone, like a marriage, or you're working in an office with a particular boss for many years, you can actually see this energy cord if you are able to tune in clairvoyantly, and it'll be pretty thick, and it's kind of flesh-colored, very much like an actual umbilical cord. And these cords are created by people engaging in relationships and interactions with each other. And what's tricky, ideally, such a cord is more of a positive thing that creates rapport and creates the ability to communicate well. But we have a tendency in this society to just dump our psychic crud on each other. And when someone's in a bad mood, if they're angry at you, even if they don't even yell at you, if they're just kind of putting out anger and you have a strong connection to them, that energy gets very quickly conveyed down that cord and you just pick it up. Now, you may not be aware of it, but you probably will have energy effects right away, like you're suddenly tired or you are suddenly a little depressed and you don't know why. And this can be happening across distance. The person could be 1,000 miles away, but if you have a strong connection to them, that cord still remains and transmits psychic energy. So what often happens when people go through like a breakup, that cord still exists and they're still picking up a lot of stuff from the person they're splitting with. And the process of shamanic decording is actually, it's different depending on the tradition of the practitioner. I'm kind of a neo-shamanic person in that I synthesize techniques from a bunch of different styles of work. But it's the idea of taking that cord and actually cutting it when you have a toxic person in your life that's draining you all the time. And you use your spiritual guides and your angels and you request that they actually do this severing of the cord. Well, what's interesting is we pick up a lot of goop from people just walking down the street sometimes. You know, you can just pick up the crazy guy on the street that wants your money and he's sending out a lot of negative energy, or maybe you had a fight with your roommate that day. And even if these aren't major incidents, a clairvoyant can see that there's these little cords coming off of you that are transmitting goop.
How do you get rid of them?
Well, one of the techniques I just mentioned, the thing about the salt tubs and using salt water in your energy field very aggressively, will actually usually clear out any of those cords that are less intense, like things that just occurred over a couple days with someone. But for a long-term relationship, if there's a lot of healing that needs to be done, like with a family member or something where there's a lot of issues going on, you may need to be decorded more formally with a shamanic practitioner who knows this technique. Now, you can read about decording. I think there's probably a lot of articles online. And Michael Harner is the owner of shamanism.org, which he's trained a lot of people to do this work all over the world. So you can
I've read a couple of his books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's very good. I actually trained with a student of a student of his. And he's kind of reintroduced shamanic techniques so that a Western person who is not necessarily Native American can still use these techniques in an appropriate way. And yet you can also just invoke that your spiritual guides and angels take care of decording for you if you're connected to your guides and you sort of trust them to do the work. But if you just picture energy coming out kind of like electrical cords that plug you into different people in your life, the idea is to try to have harmony with each person that you're plugged into. Of course, we're not in that state of harmony all the time.
Jennifer, is this similar to, I've heard the term used before, spiritual vampire or emotional vampire? Is it similar to that?
Mm-hmm. We all have the ability to be psychic vampires, whether we realize it or not, because we often throw off a lot of our shadow side and we're not aware that we're doing it. And we especially do this with loved ones quite a lot. And the thing is, when you feel your energy being drained by someone, you can minimize the effect by learning certain things about your own energy field and how it operates, doing regular meditation to clear your chakras out, learning the idea of the salt baths and the salt tubs. And also working with this idea of decording is another tool. I worked with a lot of people who were coming out of abusive relationships, and I could see this very black cord where the person was just sucking energy off the person. And what's interesting is even if they still lived in the same town as their abuser, let's say they moved away, but they're still kind of in the same geographical location, once they went through a shamanic decording from that person, they failed to be drained by them ever again. They were able to recover their well-being emotionally and spiritually very rapidly. It's a very powerful technique. So it's one thing that people might want to check into if they're interested in the idea.
The other term, soul loss, that sounds really bad. what does that mean?
Well, first let me clarify. In the shamanic perspective, soul loss doesn't really mean that you lose your entire soul, at least not usually. What it means is more like fractures that happen within our energy field. If you think, going back to pies and pie crusts for a moment.
Okay.
If you can think of the energy field as like an egg or a round or an egg shaped, it could be a pie shaped. You know, some people say it's circular. Some people say it's more like an egg shape. And it's divided into pieces. Some of these pieces can end up with people that you've been drained by in the past. They could be abusers, or they could just be someone that you broke up with years ago. Pieces of you can be left in past relationships and in past experiences, and they can create depression. It's one of the strongest causes of chronic fatigue that I've seen in clients. You know, there's a lot of these illnesses people are suffering from now that have no real medical origin that we can find, and some of them are more energy illnesses than physical illnesses. And when you work with them from an energy perspective and you heal them, shamanic practitioners are taught to do soul retrieval, where they actually go out on a journey astrally and they interact with your guides and your angels, and they work with them to bring back all the soul fragments that you've lost. And these can also be things that happen in past lives. Let's say that I had an experience being burned at the stake once in the Inquisition.
Burned at the stake.
Yeah, in the Inquisition. And I've had a lot of recall about it in this life, and I was finally able to work with a shamanic practitioner who's very gifted. Just last year, we finally got this piece, and it was a big piece of my soul that was just lost. And it was creating huge trauma around me trying to go forward publicly as a metaphysical person. Because every time in this life that I started to do that, I was feeling the trauma from that past life be reenacted. And it was because this little piece of my soul, think of it as a ball of energy, was missing. So soul loss is the idea that through trauma, we lose little pieces of our vital energy, and that by restoring them and learning how to bring them back to yourself and cleanse them, you can really experience well-being and enhanced health.
How did you go about soul retrieval?
Well, I learned several years ago about the idea. I came to it kind of late in my work because I'd already been very burned out as a psychic counselor, and I didn't really know why. And I had given too much of my energy to my clients, I discovered, because every time someone came to me, I wanted them to feel better so much, I didn't realize I was actually giving them pieces of my own energy. So after 10 years of that, I was pretty sick. I had chronic fatigue. I had a lot of problems, physical problems. And I had a shamanic practitioner in my life who finally, you know, kind of talked to me and said, hey, you got to stop doing this and let me help you get well. And he started reclaiming the soul fragments and also decording me from my clients. And I got immediately better. It's like 90% better very fast. So that was a big lesson for me. And then I learned how to work with that idea with others. So
you also talk about spiritual warriorship techniques. What do you mean?
Yeah, I think what's complicated when people don't trust their own psychic abilities is that they're very often feeling things and not really honoring what they're feeling. We've all had times when we've been feeling a fight or flight reaction to something where we just sense that either a situation or a person isn't safe for us. It's a very visceral animal reaction. And yet your nervous system is often telling you something that's very important. And when you start to work with subtle energies a lot more as a spiritual healer or as a spiritual seeker, you can start to come under some attack where people are aiming a lot of negativity at you. And some of it's sometimes very severe in the form of actual spells that people are doing or things that are really conjuring up negative entities and they're coming at you. And unless you're prepared, you don't know what to do when this stuff happens, and you can get very ill, or you can have a lot of chaos happen in your life, and you don't know what the heck's going on. So what I really try to do is reach out to, again, going back to the white lighters we were talking about earlier, who really just want to, you know, they always want to just see love as the solution and, you know, don't worry about evil because it doesn't really exist. Well, the fact is it does. We still live in a very dual, polarized reality. We're not yet in heaven. And while we're down here as spiritual beings, we need to learn how to shield ourselves and how to learn to minimize contact with psychic vampires in our life. And we need to learn how to trust our impressions when we bump into a situation where we just feel negativity. Maybe we can't put words around even what we're feeling, but maybe you should back away. And a lot of times, my work with other sensitive people is about guiding them to understand how to do that, or that they even should. Because we repress a lot of our natural instincts. We tend not to.
You know, we sure do.
Yeah.
Jennifer, I know that we have run out of time. I've got about 8 million more questions to ask you.
I know. I feel like we barely started our talk.
Yeah, we're at the 10 o'clock, and I've got some time catch-up to do here. Jennifer, it was an absolute delight to speak to you.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate getting to chat with you today.
Will we be able to get you on again?
I hope so. I would love to come back on.
Oh, I have so many more questions, and, you know, I've gone through your website. There's so much there. It's kind of like, where do you start? Such as, off the top of my head from my notes, how to pray successfully. You've got so many things that I want to discuss. So we're going to go through some reorganization here over the next couple of months. And it looks like the producer may move to California and so on and so forth. So in right after that, towards the spring, maybe we can get you back on the show.
I think that would be fun, and maybe we could come up with some more themes based on some of the stuff that I cover at my website, because sometimes I'm only covering something in a very brief way there, and I'd love to discuss things more.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
You too. Thanks very much, Nevin.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
And welcome back to What a World Radio. Our next guest will be Judith Pleasant. But before we get to the second hour guest, we're going to have an update from Jill Campanella from Gazing at the Stars. Jill spends a lot of time looking up into the heavens. Hi, Jill. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Well, thanks, Kevin.
What have you got for us tonight?
Well, I was noticing today that yesterday, all day long, the moon was void of course. To some, this statement might bring images of the lunar disk running amok and zigzagging out into the Milky Way galaxy or plummeting to the Earth, or bring to the minds of some of you Cliff Nicholson's documentation and clever commentary on the seemingly erratic path and position of the moon over the last few years. But to astrologers, void of course is simply a phrase used to indicate that the moon is unaspected. That is, there are no major connection aspects to other orbs as it progresses from one sign to the next. Therefore, emotions and knee-jerk reactions are kind of free-floating. So this is a great time for reflection and meditation, but ill-advised for acting on long-term decisions, such as signing a contract to buy a house or getting married. I spent the day wrapped up in a blanket, meditating and napping. A classic example of a decision made when the moon was void, of course, was President Clinton's taking the oath of office and formally accepting the office of the presidency on January 20th, 1997. If he had waited to be sworn in when the moon was firmly connected, would that term of his presidency taking on a different RF or tone. Well, never know, but I find it interesting. Even more interesting was the fact that the moon was also void, of course, when he took the oath of office 4 years earlier. This morning, the moon moved into Leo. Usually, I'd say, what a great time to get your creative juices flowing. Get up on the stage and strut your stuff. However, with Saturn, the planet in charge of rules and limitations, also in Leo, you'd be well advised to structure your performance on the traditional side rather than jumping out into new territory. Mercury is approaching a beneficial trine, a 120-degree aspect with Saturn, stimulating success with responsible thinking and communication. Venus, barely into Aquarius, will station retrograde on December 24th. From now until she goes direct on February 4th is an opportune time to review past relationships. You might even be surprised by the sudden appearance of an old friend or acquaintance. However, this is not a beneficial time to begin a new relationship, as the romance may cool when Venus resumes forward motion. The Sun moves into Capricorn on Wednesday, December 21st at 11:23 Mountain Standard Time. Just before lunchtime, take a moment and appreciate the sun's warmth and light and welcome the sun's slow but sure return to the northern hemisphere. This winter solstice begins with an abundance of energies combined in fascinating configurations, one of which is a mystic rectangle blending the energies of the moon, Mars, Jupiter, and Uranus, their respective signs ruling the elements of water and earth. A mystic rectangle is a combination of two oppositions, that's 180 degrees apart, two 120-degree trines. This also involves earth and water trines. There are two of them. And two 60-degree aspects called sextiles. So, briefly, Uranus opposes the moon, trines Jupiter, and sextiles Mars. Jupiter opposes Mars, and sextiles the moon. Mars trines the moon. So what do I see in this? For one thing, an abundance of earth and water, necessary ingredients for new growth, with just enough fire to spark the seeds into an abundance of growth for the coming year. The subtle but powerful mystical triangle eases the pressure from challenging aspects currently present, that's three T squares, and reminds us of the power that lies within each of us, the power to create. So, that's all. Good night, and be peaceful to yourself.
Well, thank you, Jill. We always appreciate what comes from the stars, and of course, I have my wife, Jill, right next to me, so I get to know all about the stars almost on a daily basis. Well, we are now into our second hour. I've been playing a little catch-up on time. Our next guest is Judith Pleasant. Judith is an accomplished psychic, writer, and songwriter. She and her husband live in Toledo, Ohio, with Ziggy, Casper, and Sunshine. Judith Pleasant started studying tarot cards in 1983. She went on to study about other areas pertaining to extrasensory perception, including spiritual healing, psychometry, mediumship, and spiritualism. Although she no longer does reading for the public, she has retained her psychic gift and the ability to communicate with the spirit world. Hi, Judith. Welcome to Waterworld Radio.
Well, hi there. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm wondering, is it as cold in Ohio as it is here in northern Utah? I've been absolutely froze.
It's 12 degrees.
That's pretty cold. It's not quite that cold here.
Down to 10, and it's chilly. Very chilly.
Do you have
here.
Snow?
Yes, we have snow on the ground. Probably, well, we had a couple of snows, and I would say somewhere we probably have maybe 8-10 inches that's accumulated, you know, between a couple of snows. So the streets are clear, but, you know, the snow's on the ground probably till spring.
Oh, I can hardly stand it. I've spent the last
10 years down in the Southwest desert, and due to unfortunate circumstances, had to move to northern Utah. I'm hoping to make this a very short stay and hopefully never have to go through a winter like this again. Well, Judith, why don't we get a little bit into your background. How did you get started with psychic skills? And tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm a lady that was born and raised in Virginia. We moved to Ohio when I was 18. My whole family did. And then, like, when I was 21, I married my first husband, my daughter's father. And we were married, like, 12 years, and he decided that he wanted to move on. And that's when I really, when he left, is pretty much when I had more time, I guess, to do some soul searching and try to find myself and my purpose and what I wanted to do with my life other than the job that I was working to put a roof over my daughter's head, you know. And I met a lady who was an astrologer. And some of your Jill's information is so, like, makes so much sense to me. I call them the void of course moon days my lazy days, because from what I've experienced and what I've been told, when you do something on a void of course moon, nothing will come of it. And I found that to be true. So she, strike one for there for her. She's a good one there. But anyway, back to me.
I did a little research on where you came from.
Yeah.
And you have the name of the town is Stonega.
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 S-T-O-N-E-G-A.
How does someone acquire that kind of name for a town?
I don't know where the name came from, but it was like a mining town. I mean, it was like very small. And my dad was a coal miner, so I'm a coal miner's daughter.
Ah, do you sing?
What I do, you can't call singing. I can like get a song out, but you wouldn't really call it singing.
We're not going to make a second movie on a coal miner's daughter from Stonega, Virginia, is what you're saying.
Stonega.
It's Stonega.
Well, I
was so curious about the name, Judith, that I went on the net. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about your town.
Mm-hmm.
Originally organized by the Virginia Coal and Iron Company in 1890.
Yeah,
the
village of pioneers. Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
That they were the first successful local attempt to produce coke. So you've come from actually a very historic mining area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's all the people did in that town, you know, when I was younger. And then, you know, they pretty much worked the mines out at that time, and they closed them down. But now I think they're back working them again, because I guess they found different spots where there's more coal. And so, you know, some people still survive, you know, do mining, you know, for the coal down there. So, yeah,
What was it like growing up in a coal mining town?
Very poor.
Very Come on, you had... Did you have shoes?
Yeah, we had shoes, but you
know. Okay, you're better off than a lot of other people.
Yeah, but you know, it was rough at times. You know, when Dad was working in the mines, it was fine, you know, and we had food and stuff like that. But then, you know, when the mines closed, it got pretty tough there. But yeah, I'm the youngest of 10 children, so we had a big family, and even though we were, you know, on the poor side, we were very close and just had a good connection. So that made it easier to get through.
Well, you've had a lot happen to you in your life, Judith.
Yeah.
One of which is your life seems to have been bound by some very traumatic illnesses. And you wrote a book or a short story, My Way of Coping with Cancer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, I wrote that book just to explain some of my feelings on cancer and how I coped with it, and in hopes that it might help some other people. But mainly, it was pretty much just to emphasize some of the stuff that goes on, you know, like you can't always take the doctor's word. And I keep repeating in the book, to take part and participate in your care, because you have a say in what goes on. And sometimes people think they don't. They think, well, whatever the doctor says is what you got to do. But that's not always the case. Sometimes that might not be the right thing for you. But in 1993, I found out I had colon cancer. But before that, for several years, my doctor, I kept telling him, you know, that I had stomach problems, and I, you know, I had rectal bleeding. Of course, I had hemorrhoids because of giving birth to a very large daughter, you know. And so he just kept putting it off to this or putting it off to that, you know. And he gave me tests for my upper GI, but nothing, you know, from down there. And so finally, he retired, and I got another doctor. I kept telling him the same complaint, so it's on and on. You know, it's so hard to get a doctor to listen to you and really pay attention. And
yeah.
So therefore, a lot of people die because of it.
I went through that experience recently with my wife. She was severely ill.
Yeah.
And what the doctors seem to do is they want to look at the patient from papers they
uh-huh.
have from their tests rather uh-huh. than actually talk to the patient.
Exactly.
And it was exasperating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's just like, you know, finally after a long time, you know, of telling this guy, you know, I'm just having all these bowel problems, you know, I just kept persisting. And finally he did a sigmoid, test, and he saw that I had a pop down there. And then he sent me to internal medicine guy, and he did a colonoscopy, and he found a polyp. And by the time they found it, it was like a mushroom, and it had started to invade the stalk. But thank God it hadn't gotten all the way down the stalk. And so he removed that through the colonoscopy, and he saved my life. Now, he was a good doctor. There are some very good doctors out there that care about you, but there's some that just wouldn't take the time to do what they're supposed to do.
Are you saying that the cancer problem was solved via surgery?
Well, he did. He removed that through, you know, how they do the colonoscopy. They put the tube up your, you know, up through your bowel and thing. Yeah, he removed it that way. But he said he thought he had gotten it. He says he was like 98% sure that he had gotten all of the cancer. He says, but he wanted me to have a surgery to have like a foot on either side of that, or half a foot on either side of that spot, just to make sure. Well, intuitively, I felt he had gotten it all, so I kind of got a little bit lackadaisy for a while. And now he was a doctor that really cared, because he even called me at home. And he said, Judy, are you going to follow through with this and get this surgery done? And you know, he says, I want to make sure, he says, because, you know, you're a younger woman. He says, you got a long life ahead of you, but, you know, you need to make sure. So I did. I had I had colon surgery, and they did remove a foot of my colon. And he was right, and I was right. They had gotten it all. But still, yeah, you know, that's very traumatic to have to go through all that when I shouldn't have had to, if the doctors would have listened to me in the beginning. You know what I mean?
How long ago was the surgery?
That was in 93. And then in 98, I found out I had uterine cancer. And to be honest with you, I think maybe that might have been there when they did the colon surgery, but they just didn't see it. But I think it's because I asked a nurse once when I was talking to her that works, you know, for the doctor that does the surgery. She says, well, sometimes it can be in there, like if it's in the uterus, you know, when they're working on the bowel, it could be there, and they couldn't see it, you know. So I think really I had it, you know, back then even. But they did catch that in time. This doctor that I told that I had the complaints with before that didn't listen, Finally, I decided to go get a second opinion, and I went to a gynecologist, and she was very good, and she found the cancer and sent me to another guy that was a gynecologist, but an oncologist also, and he did the surgery and removed that. And thank God, both times I didn't have to have any chemo or radiation. It's just the surgery did it, you know. So,
Would you say that the cancer is now gone? That
I'm free. Yes, I'm free. And
wonderful.
I don't need any more cancer. I don't, you know, I've learned enough. Thank you.
Well, that had to be a very scary experience. How did it affect your relationship with your husband and so on and so forth?
Well, to be honest with you, we got married the year that I found out that I had the cancer. Because at that time, well, just before, not long before that, I had the job that I work at, I had fallen at work and I had screwed up some disc in my back. So it's like it was very hard for me to work because of that. So my husband, the dear guy that he was, took on the burden of marrying me so, you know, so I would have medical insurance because I didn't have any at that time. And so, you know, it's like life is not easy for some people, you know. Some people have it very easy and everything. But, yeah, he married me, and then I had my surgery, and all turned out well, you know. So I, you know, I thank God for him for that, you know, for being, you know, being there for me. And it's
well,
always
how
been...
did you, how did you get to the spiritual side of what you do at this point? In other words, where does the psychic part of you come in? Where does the metaphysics come in?
With the illness part?
In,
what you're
in
talking
all
about?
Of it. Where does it start, and how did you use it through the cancer episode?
Okay. Well, I started developing my ability in 83, right around there. And I, you know, I pursued it over the years, and I was getting, you know, pretty good at it, you know, in like in 89, 90, 91. I had a very good following. I had a lot of people that referred people, and I could read for myself. A lot of psychics cannot read for themselves, but I could. And so, I would read for myself, you know, when I found out that I was ill, and I could see, kind of see what the outcome was going to be. So that helped me, you know, to, have faith. And then,
wait a minute. Judith, you said you knew what the outcome would be?
Well, I kind of, you know, how I told you when the doctor told me he was 98% sure he had gotten the cancer from the first polyp. I just definitely knew he did because I just kind of delayed having the surgery. Otherwise, I would have jumped at going and getting the surgery done. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I just, I did the tarot cards, and I would look, you know, look at that, and it showed a good outcome, you know what I mean? And so with that, that gave me the faith. And of course, I did a lot of praying. I had everybody I know to pray for me, you know, so I definitely believe that miracles happen and faith. But also, I think you have to have a purpose or the will to move forward and know that there's something, you have a reason to be here. And I do. I think I have a reason to be here. Otherwise, I wouldn't have survived.
Well, how would you define that reason?
That reason? My daughter.
Your daughter?
My daughter. She's been the best thing that I have ever had in my life. I was, you know, she's just, I don't know, she's kind of like an old soul. And she was 8 years old when her dad left. So she and I used to talk, you know, I would talk to her like I would talk to a sister or a friend, a poor kid, putting that burden on her, you know, when mom would be troubled about something. But, you know, she's just a good listener, and she was kind of like my best friend. And I knew she needed me. I mean, and right now she's 34 years old, but she still needs me. People always need their parents. I lost my parents. My mom was 62 when she died. I was 21, so it was very hard, you know, to lose a parent that age. And I just didn't want to put my daughter in that situation. So I'm going, God, you know, my daughter needs me, you know. So, yeah, my daughter has been my purpose for everything I've done in my life, is to move forward and try to do things and be creative and to try to help other people. Does that sound stupid?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who remain on this planet to take care of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that happen over and over again. Judith, you talk on your website, you talk about spirit helpers. Why don't you define that for us a little bit? What do you mean by spirit helpers?
Spirit helpers. Well, spirits are people, or, you know, that have passed over onto the other side. And some people call them angels, some people call them guides. And I call them my spirit helpers because they've given me a lot of help over the years. When I began my work, I sat down and I got a piece of paper, and I wrote out on that piece of paper, I said, you know, I would like to call a guide into me that will help me with, you know, different areas of my life. I would like for him to be, you know, have a lot of good qualities and be intelligent and also be a healer and to help people. I said, you know, I want to develop my abilities so I can help myself and other people as well. And I would like a guide that would help me to do this. And so, right away he didn't appear to me. I have a main guide that is a young Indian medicine man. He didn't appear to me like really, like I couldn't see his vision or what in the beginning. But, I knew things were different. I was able to see things more clearly. I was able to pick up on things, and just my intuition was becoming very strong. So I knew there was someone helping me. I just didn't know who he was in the beginning. So
how did he make himself known to you?
He did that through a friend of mine who was also a psychic. We were talking on the phone one day, and I said, you know, I know I have a guide, but I haven't seen him or her, and I said, but I know there's help there. But at that time, I had been collecting, like, some Indian stuff. I have a lot of Native American blood, mostly Cherokee, but some other breeds in there. But I started collecting, like, a few things. I had a tomahawk that I had bought from a friend of mine's father. He made the Indian stuff, and I bought that. And when I put it up on the wall, I like put it in upright position instead of, you know, like laying it down. And I was telling my friend, you know, that I would like to know who my guide is. I said, I know he's there and I kind of know who he is, but it's just like, he hasn't really spoken to me. And she told me, she says, well, his name is Sawhorse. And she started, you know, describing him. And as she was describing him, I could see him, and I could see his vision and stuff, and it was pretty awesome. And he gave her a message to get to me, and she had not seen my tomahawk because it was in my bedroom, and I had it hanging with a couple other Indian things. And she said, he is upset because you have the tomahawk in the fighting position, and he doesn't like that. He wants you to change it, and then he will come to you. And so that night, I changed it and kind of just laid it down instead of having it upright. And I think it was like the very next night, I was kind of just had my eyes shut and was kind of just deep in thought. And he showed me what he looked like, and he just started communicating with me then after that. So it was pretty awesome.
When he started communicating with you, why don't you describe that? I mean, is this a voice you heard in your head, or is it outside of you? Describe it.
Well, as I said, he showed me what he looked like, and he showed me that he lived in a cave, but he didn't really live there. I think he just went there to meditate. And he told me he liked to eat rabbit, and he was just like really chilling. But he didn't really talk to me. It's like when spirit gives me a message, it's not like they stand out here beside me and you know, talk to me. It's thought patterns that they put through my mind.
Okay.
And so that's how I get my information. It's kind of like a thought pattern. And I found over the years that when I find myself thinking about something, or a thought comes to me, and I'll say, oh, that's just my imagination. I find out that it's not my imagination. It's very, very accurate information that I should pay attention to.
Can anybody do this, or does it take a special person?
Anyone can do it. I think we all are born with intuitive gifts. But, you know, it's just like anything else. If you want to work on it and develop it and use it more.
Well,
then
you wrote a book called My Spirit Helpers.
My Spirit Helpers, yes.
Do you describe in that book how people go about acquiring a spirit helper?
Well, kind of. I kind of told how I did mine. You know, it's not a teaching book or a tell-how book. It's pretty much telling about how I did, you know, how I started my work with my intuition. And it kind of tells how I worked with it a little bit, you know. So I guess you could learn from it, you know, by saying, well, you know, she did it this way or she did it that way. And, but yeah, it does tell quite a bit about how I began working with it and things, you know, little stories that would happen, you know, from time to time, you know, as I was developing, and especially in the beginning, it was just like, you know, some of the stuff was just very pronounced. Like the first time that I actually saw a vision, and it was through psychometry, which is holding an object in your hand and getting like a picture or feelings or impressions from that. It was from a coworker, and it was of her dog, her little dog that was in spirit, and he was just so cute, just sitting there like he was waiting for her. And I described him, and she knew exactly who I was talking about. And she said that she had been worried about him since, I think she was like 6 years old, and he hung himself on his chain, and she'd always wondered if he was all right. So through me, he let her know that he was all right. So it was kind of very touching because she got tears in her eyes, and I did too, because it was just like just a good message for her to comfort her.
How would people get a hold of your book? Would you announce your website for us, please?
Yes, my website is pleasantinspirations.com, pleasantinspirations.com. But I can get it through there. And but I have other books also that I've written since then. But, yeah, My Spirit Helpers was my first. It was quite interesting doing it myself and self-publishing it. And, you know, when you're determined, I guess you can do a lot of things, huh?
Oh, you sure can. Now, you spent a lot of time in working with other people at one point, didn't you?
I did. I have. And I still do. You know, you said that I don't do readings anymore. I do a few, but I'm very select of who I do them for. Like I do referrals from friends or, you know, some people, but it's like just anybody and everybody I don't, because there's, I was listening earlier when she was talking about the psychic vampires. There's just
mm-hmm.
people out there that just really suck you dry. They don't understand that trying to help them or, you know, trying to even do readings for some people, it's just like they take so much of your energy because, you know, if you just accept the reading and go with it, okay, but then there's some people that just want to hear what they want to hear, whether or not it's there. And I won't tell them what they want to hear just because they want to hear it, because that's not me. If I don't see it, I don't, you know, I don't tell them, your boyfriend's going to come back or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's mostly what they get obsessed about, you know. But, yeah, mm-hmm. And so, no, I don't, just to make a buck, I don't tell people just what they want to hear. If it's
you,
not there,
you tell them the straight truth as you know it.
I tell them what spirit gives me, yes.
How?
And I don't try to pretend. And, sometimes I get a little upset because I don't tell them what they want to hear, but I says, you know, if it's not there, how can I tell you it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair to my guides, and it's not fair to me, and it's not fair to you.
How can people use the results of a reading? I mean, what can they actually do with it?
Well, they can do a lot with it if they so desire. My motto for getting a reading is to be forewarned, is to be forearmed. Because, you know, sometimes if you can see stuff coming before it happens, you can make changes, you know, that would, you know, maybe make things more beneficial for you. Like, I could tell you, you're going to get a grand, great, wonderful job tomorrow morning. But if you stay in bed and cover up your head and you don't get out and try to look for that job, of course, it's not going to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use that information and you put out effort there and go out and put your application in at something that you want to do or something that you're looking for, the likelihood of that job coming is greater. So if they can take the information that I give them and use it to make life decisions, you know, sometimes it's just minor decisions. But sometimes it's major decisions, like with their health or with work or, you know, relationships or whatever. You just have to, in other words, I do believe that some things in life are destined and that we have no control over, you know, like dying, you know, when it's our time, we're going to go no matter what, where, or when. But I also think that while we are here, we can heal. You know, use our healing abilities to help heal each other or ourselves, as long as we're supposed to be here on Earth. And but yeah, to use that information to just make life decisions. You know, that would, you know, instead of saying, oh, should I do this? Should I do this? If I give them options, then at least they have something to go on.
Well, your experience as a medium, one of the questions I have is, do you ever encounter bad spirits? I mean, you know, they're just malignant kinds of things.
Yeah, I have a couple of times, but I've been very blessed because, you know, that was one of the things when I asked for my guide way back when. I asked for one that would protect me from harm, and so I've had some guides that have really protected me. But there's been a couple of times that. I've had a couple of situations that made me a little bit nervous. One was going to a place here in Toledo. It's art place and real big old building. And a couple of friends of mine took me there, and they wanted me to go through there. And there were some things there that really made me uncomfortable. Especially they wanted me to go down in the basement. They told me that it was really eerie. And it was. It was just like, normally I'll just go move right on forward. And like, I do house cleansings or, you know, send spirit to the light. And I use sea salt and I use holy water or healing water for that.
So oh, you use did you say sea salt?
Mm-hmm.
That's the second time tonight that subject has come up.
I know. I heard that earlier. And I was relating to it somewhat because, you know, she's used it for healing the body and stuff, which I agree, you know, it does work, but it also is a very good cleanser, you know.
How do you use it?
Okay, I will tell you, I walked in this room that made me feel very uncomfortable. There was a lot of darkness down there, not just because the basement was dark, but you could feel the cold, evil darkness, you know. And normally I would walk through the room, but this time it's like, okay, this is a bit much energy, you know. So I just stood like at the front of the room and I said a prayer for God to send in white light and get rid of any negative energy there. And if, you know, if there's any spirits there, that they should move forward unto the light. And I just sprinkled some, take some sea salt into my hand. And sprinkle that around, and same thing with the healing water, holy water. I just sprinkle that around as I say the prayer, and it normally works. I do quite a few. I did one. There's a radio station here in town. Last Halloween, not this one past, but the other one before, I went to a home, and it was like a Halloween promotion that I did for them. And these people had some spirits in their house. And, it was one man, and he was really like bothering them. They couldn't sleep and stuff. So they asked me to go out, and I went out, and they did some photos of the cleansing, and I said the prayer, and, you know, I sprinkled some sea salt and the holy water. And in one of the photos, it was really cool. I mean, you could see, like, orbs, but it was more than orbs. It was kind of like, well, you could just see shadows in the photos. But In the one where I was, like, really deep in the middle of my my cleansing prayer, we were kind of in a circle, even though I didn't tell them to be. It was kind of, they were just circled kind of around me. But in the middle of that circle, and in front of me on the floor, it was like you could see the shadow of this man that was laying flat on his back, like with his hands up, like, I give.
Mm.
And it was so clear to see that. So they showed it to me. I said, boy, that's pretty awesome. We got him pretty good, huh? he gave up. And it's just like he left the room then. And it was, you can tell when you send him over and when you tell him to go to the light, you can feel the energy change in the room. It goes, it just is lighter and brighter. And it's pretty interesting.
You mentioned photographs. Do you have in your possession photographs?
Of that? Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Because I didn't see any on your website, or maybe I just missed it.
Well, no, I didn't put it on my website. I just hadn't really gotten around to it. The radio station had taken them, so I guess I was really going to ask them if it was okay, but I guess I'm the one that did the work, so I have the right to use them, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, I should, you know, at a little bit later time. Right now, I've been working a little bit more on it, trying to update my website. And my site is pretty plain because that's how I like it. I like it simple and plain because that's how I am. Just, you know, cut to the shaft kind of thing and just kind of go with the flow kind of person. And, but yeah, I thought about it earlier, really, about posting that on there.
Well, how does a person go about getting a psychic reading from you? How do they get in touch with you?
They can go into my pleasantinspirations.com website and hit the contact me button, and then they can email me, and I will get back with them.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Can you do psychic readings just over the phone, or do you have to see the person in person?
No, I can do them over the phone, but anymore, since I pretty much stopped doing readings except for a few, I normally only do them now by cassette tape, which is very easy for me because I don't have to deal with that person's energy. I can just, all I need is their name, and I can sit down here at night by myself and, concentrate on their name, and I do a reading and tape it, and it gives very good results. The people that I do them for, I've done them for people in L.A. and stuff, you know, sent them out there. And they're just in awe, you know, of how accurate it is without them, you know, being around me. Now, with, like, if I'm going to channel spirit, I do have to do that, like, by phone. I don't do that by tape very well.
Uh-huh. Can you do a psychic reading on me now?
Well, I wanted to ask you, do you know a man, and I'm certain he's in spirit, and I got a name like James Thomas or James Thompson?
No, I'm not familiar with the name.
It doesn't make sense to you right now?
No.
Okay. Well, earlier I was thinking, and that name came to me, and he said it goes to you, and he looks to be about your age, maybe 5 years younger, and he has brown hair, and he's on the thinner side. He's very very compassionate, but there's the sadness around him.
What does he have to do with me?
I don't know. Somehow he's trying to help you. He wouldn't be like a family member that would have passed, because that's what I'm getting. He's some sort of a family member that would have passed several years ago.
No, probably not a family member. I've been so detached from from my own family. Is there anything that you can tell me about me besides this individual?
Okay. What do you want to know about you?
All right.
Okay, let me... Okay.
How about if I ask you a question and let's see if you can come up with an answer? How's that?
Okay, you can do that. I normally like go blind, you know, from blind without knowing any information, but it's...
Well, I want to give the audience a feel for the experience.
Okay.
I'm considering the possibility of going to Paradise, California. Will that occur or not?
It will.
Oh.
And it will happen within 2 months. There's going to be some major discussions about this. The conversations are going to start before the first of the year. But then just after the first of the year, there's going to be more discussion. And there's a reason for you to be there. And it's very important to you. And it's going to help you in a lot of ways. I feel it's going to be helpful to you financially, but I also feel it's going to be helpful to you emotionally to stabilize some stuff or situations that you've been dealing with. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, most certainly does, especially the emotional part, because what you're talking about is my attachment with my wife. She's been severely ill. And the cold weather here, I think, is starting to get to her. And so a move to something like Paradise, California would be really, really good.
Now, is she blonde?
No, she's a redhead.
Oh, well, okay. She has lighter color hair, right?
Well, you
it's
might
not
be
brown.
Talking, this is my second wife. My first wife was a blonde.
Okay. So is your first wife giving you some hassles?
Is my first wife what?
Giving you some hassle?
I hope not. No,
okay.
No.
Now she was blonde?
Yeah, my first wife was blonde.
I see a situation around her where it's like you kind of just don't know what to do. You know, kind of in a turmoil, like seeing a street. And I said, is she going to cause you a little bit of aggravation?
She's always been a lot of aggravation.
Well,
I think the most interesting part about the reading is the way you tagged the timing. That was very interesting because I do expect some of these discussions to come up pretty quick.
Yeah.
And we do very much want to go to California, where we are simply waiting for pieces to fall into place. So that
now
is excellent.
Now, this has to do with some work you're going to be doing that has to do with psychic stuff, too?
Yes, you're right on target.
In fact,
it has to do with the radio show you're talking on right now.
Oh, really?
And, yes.
Well, can I come to California with you?
You probably want to get out of Toledo with all that cold.
Yeah, my daughter lives in L.A., and she's coming home tomorrow night, and the poor girl is going to freeze here. So where is Paradise? Where is that located near?
Do you know where Chico, California is? It's in the northern part of the state.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And if you were to go northwest, let's see. It's a little bit hard to describe, but it's on the west side of the Sierras, and
yeah.
It's north of San Francisco.
So it's damp and chilly up there, though, isn't it?
No, actually, this particular valley that we're talking about is pretty nice and very warm weather.
Oh, okay. Because I know it's like San Francisco. Oh, it's so damp. I hated it there.
Well, this is not that close to the ocean. This is inward from there.
Uh-huh.
And so it's considerably drier than what you would experience in San Francisco. It's not on the coast.
Uh-huh.
So the talk shows, it's the producer and so on and so forth, everything is going out in that direction, and of course everything that we do is around metaphysics.
Oh, everything you do is?
Yep, pretty much. I'm the only one who brings in anything other than that, so you pretty much hit it on the head.
Yeah, well, I definitely see it's going to be a more spiritual show. You're going to be talking about spirituality more. And so there's a lot of things going on with that. Well, if I had time, I would do a whole, you know, like an actual little reading for you. That was just like a little bits and pieces thing, you know.
Well, my purpose, Judith, was to give the audience a little bit of experience of what it's like to get a psychic reading. I would appreciate any kind of reading you want to do, but for tonight, that's all I was trying to get out from you. You know, what happens to two people on a phone?
Well, it looks very good. I feel very good. I want to say just right after the holiday, it's going to like take place.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
And it looks good. And you're going to be doing some healing work also out there.
Me personally?
Well, you, whatever you're involved with, this shows something. Yeah, I see more healing, you know, taking place. And not with just you and your wife, but I think you're going to be working in the healing field somehow, or, you know, helping people to heal.
Yeah, that's
like I know about, you know, I know about that. I do what I call laying on hands healing. But I don't necessarily have to lay hands on to send the healing energy in. I can do that by phone too. So,
marvelous. I really admire people with that kind of skill. Judith, I'm about as psychic as a brick.
Oh, don't give me that.
No, it's true.
I bet you are.
You're not buying it.
I'm not buying that you're not. No. I bet you're more intuitive than you'd ever let on like.
I try to maintain a low profile.
Pardon?
I try to keep a low profile.
Uh-huh. So you want to get to it, huh?
No.
Well,
Judith, I've really enjoyed the time with you, but we have run out of time.
Well, I've enjoyed being on, and thank you so much for asking me, and I hope I made a little bit of sense to people. No, it's 1 o'clock in the morning here.
Oh, I know you
got to
be really tired, really tired. Well, you have a wonderful holiday.
Well, you do the same. I'm going to say Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, dear. And you take care.
And
good
God
night.
Bless. And you guys, good luck with your move.
Oh, thank you so much. Good night, Judith.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, that ends our show for tonight. Again, it was a fascinating journey into the realm of forbidden knowledge. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella, wishing all of you health, happiness, and a safe journey on your chosen path. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.